Twain asked me to see that you were made comfortable and to say that he would be joining you after dinner.
After dinner? Hosts not have dinner with guests?
Mr. Twain prefers to eat zombie takeout. Welcome to episode 51 of Zombie Takeout.
Zombie Drive-Thru.
The B-Movie and Comedy Podcast. I'm Uncle John.
And I'm Scott O.
And this week, I would say a classic. It's probably the biggest cast we've ever had.
Right. Kind of funny when I'm reading the credits going, you know, why did I pick this exactly?
Okay, you did pick this one. I wasn't sure.
It had Neil Simon writing it and this all-star cast. And then about how many minutes into the movie did you realize, wow, this is really a B-movie?
At least in terms of the humor.
Yeah.
And plot, I guess.
And acting. And directing.
We'll get to that.
And score.
Mm-hmm. But before we get to why we think this, or perhaps don't, it's time for Scotto's impromptu plot summary. This week brought to you by Nespa Chocolates.
You don't have a funny tagline for that?
No.
All right. So what we have here is one of the greatest writers of the 20th century, one of the greatest playwrights, Neil Simon, trying his best to impersonate Mel Brooks.
Yeah, pretty much.
He took the mystery genre and had assembled the world's greatest detectives. Only a few of them, some of the most notable ones, were excluded for copyright reasons.
Mm-hmm. One of the most notable ones.
No, Sherlock Holmes,
yes.
Agatha Christie.
Was that a copyright thing? I know Holmes was.
Actually, I think Agatha Christie was supposed to be in there, but somehow got written out.
Yeah, right.
Or rewritten as the nurse.
Right, yeah.
I don't know why. But anyway, they're assembled to the country home where they are. Truman Capote plays the eccentric Lionel Twain, which, is that supposed to be a joke for Lionel Train? I don't know.
I see, the whole time I was thinking Mark Twain because of the last name, but
yeah.
I now that you mention it, quite possibly a Lionel Train reference.
Right. And they're all confronted by him where he says someone is going to be murdered at midnight and the murderer is sitting at this table and...
Classic, then there were none kind of thing.
Right. And he tells them how they're going to be murdered, and it happens, of course.
Mm-hmm.
There's all sorts of just out there trickery.
Yeah.
That none of it makes any sense. There are jokes in there, if you look really hard enough, and some of them are funny. Yeah, you know, he's not batting zero in this. This isn't exactly They Call Me Bruce, but it's close. And when the plot, I'm still kind of lost as to what happened at the end.
The end? Okay. I was kind of confused as well. Want me to explain that, or do you have more with the plot summary?
I would say hilarity ensued, but it really didn't, did it?
At times.
Yeah, hilarity kind of looked in a few times and then went away.
Now, the end, though, which I don't want to give away. The killer is revealed.
Spoiler alert.
Well, because, I mean, however much we're going to bash this movie, that ending will hurt your brain. And I don't want to ruin that for people who haven't
seen it. All right. I thought the real death should have been Neil Simon's career at this point, but it wasn't.
the end, she was the killer.
Wait.
And she was his daughter. That was his daughter, if you didn't get that part.
Oh, yeah.
And she was the real killer.
Okay. I thought you said you weren't going to spoil it.
Well, I didn't say who it was.
Okay.
Which is the real shock.
Was it?
Well, not shock per se, but the mind fuck of it was the actor you see at the end.
Okay.
Well, first off, a couple of bits of trivia. There were, at the opening and closing credits, see a bunch of characters of the actors.
Right.
They were drawn by Charles Addams, of the creator of the Addams Family. I was going to say of Addams Family fame, but the cartoon really not that famous.
Well,
he created it. It started off as a cartoon, and he did the creator of the cartoon did the caricatures at the beginning and end of the film.
Well, that's the thing with this movie. On paper, you know, last week on paper it was a B movie.
Yeah, yeah.
That had A results.
Mm-hmm.
This on paper should be an A movie.
Yes.
With the people assembled here, it's ridiculous the cast assembled here. I guess the people just really want to work with Neil Simon.
Probably.
And Neil Simon, you know, I assumed when I saw his name, wow, he must be really mad at the director of this, you know, for meshing his work. Apparently, he was on set.
Yeah, providing rewrites, yeah.
And this is what he came up with.
Just one more bit about the opening credits, the caricatures at the beginning. All of the characters' eyes move, caricatures' eyes move, except for Alec Guinness, whose character is blind, and Peter Falk.
How did Peter Sellers' eyes move? I didn't notice.
Well, his did. I mean, Peter Falk and Alec Guinness' eyes did
in
not move.
In what direction?
I didn't notice.
All right.
It was a reference. I was going for the reference to Falk having a glass eye.
I was making a cheap Asian reference because, I just sat through this movie and, you know, it come naturally.
Okay, now, on to that. And this may be something that would better suit the end of the review, but I'll get to it since you're going there.
Okay.
For, I'd say, the first three quarters of this movie, the cheap jokes and the political incorrect, the blatant political incorrectness wasn't really my cup of tea. Oddly enough, I thought it would be yours.
Well, you know, I do like that sort of thing, but not when every Asian joke is accompanied by a gong.
Okay. Now, if we're specifically talking about the Asian jokes.
Yes.
The reason they went there, all of it kind of dawned on me at the end. I finally got all the jokes, or got the big joke.
Okay.
The actor who played obviously Wang is a reference, Peter Sellers' character Wang is a reference to Charlie Chan.
Yes.
All of the fictional crime fighter, the detectives, whatever you want to call
but
them.
But wait, did you say the clever name that Neil Simon came up for Charlie Chan?
What was the first name?
Willie Wang.
Was he Willie, or was Willie the nephew? The son, I should say.
I'm sorry. He's Sidney Wang, and his adopted
Wang.
Son was Willie.
Yeah, Sidney Wang, Charlie Chan. Yeah. Yeah, and that was a bit of a cheap joke, but there were a few others of this. Charlie Chan specifically was played by a white guy.
Right.
Doing
most Asians in Hollywood were.
Yeah.
Back to
doing a cheesy accent, so they were playing on that. And all of the other characters they played on sort of the era of that those characters were originally set in.
Right. But I don't mind the cheap jokes. I just don't appreciate being hit over the head with them.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, that's one thing this movie is not as subtle.
Like, when you make a cheap joke and a blatant joke, you don't need the score to punctuate each cheap joke.
No, but that was kind of a 70s thing. I mean, if you look back at that era, the comedy in that era, they kind of always did that.
It was the equivalent
the
of the bad
stuff.
Comedian.
Yeah, the rim shot, yeah.
The rim shot behind him. And, you know, to do that a couple times, all right, you get it. But that first half hour of the movie, I mean, that, fortunately, they took it out after the first half hour. I don't know why they made that decision or not, but the first half hour, the jokes are just, you should just have Gilbert Godfrey. That was a joke! You get it? It was a joke! It was funny! Who knows how old Gilbert Godfrey was at 76?
Probably about 30.
Yeah.
I'm kidding, because I don't know. Gilbert Godfrey's old.
I was going to say 40 or 50.
Yeah, okay. You were a little further than I did.
Yeah, I would have been older.
But one thing I will say about the cheap accent that Sellers gave Wang, it did lend itself to one of the funniest bits, I think, in the movie.
Oh,
when Capote is correct his English?
Yeah.
Say your goddamn pronouns.
Say your goddamn pronouns. Capote's acting.
Yeah.
Did it remind you of, like, seeing one of those bits on Letterman where you've got the celebrity doing the top 10 list?
Mm-hmm.
And just the wooden, uncomfortable...
Yeah.
...delivery...
Now that you mention Letterman, I don't know if I ever connected it before, because I'd seen this movie when I was a kid, and really it's been my only exposure to Capote aside from In Cold Blood.
Yeah.
The movie, I mean. Larry right. Bud Melman pretty much ripped his entire persona off from Truman Capote.
I guess that's what it was, now that you mention it.
That just connected for me.
Well, too bad for, sequels and remakes, he's no longer with us. But obviously...
Well, I have an idea for that.
You put Philip Seymour Hoffman in
well,
there.
Well, there's my idea. And there were a couple of other jokes that... There one in particular that did shock me.
Really?
For a mainstream film in 76.
Okay.
There was a necrophilia joke.
Well, they
sort
were
of
subtle about
a
that.
A subtle one, but still.
Yeah. Some things they were subtle about, you know. And that was one of them because they couldn't go.
Yeah, well, obviously.
Yeah. Yeah, you wouldn't think Neil Simon would come up with something like that.
Yeah,
huh?
A Neil Simon piece with a major, you know, star-studded cast, mainstream, complete, you know, beyond mainstream in 76. And right in the middle, there's a necrophilia joke.
And it's funny, speaking of all-star cast, to see James Coco in here... I think I had always assumed that it was Dom DeLuise.
Well, Coco is always, and you know, some may hate me for this, but Coco is always the second-rate Dom DeLuise.
Well, there's nothing to hate about that. Dom DeLuise was awesome.
Oh, DeLuise was amazing. But I'm saying he was kind of, Coco to me was always a poor man's Dom DeLuise.
Yeah, and that's clearly what he was here, too.
Mm-hmm.
Peter Falk, of course. I'm just going down the cast list.
Yeah.
Peter Falk, he was the one that really shined out of all of these guys, I think.
But wasn't he just really kind of playing Beretta?
Yeah. Which is why.
Oh, yeah, it worked. He knew the character very well.
Right. I guess why I say
Well,
that
not
is,
Beretta. Columbo.
Columbo. Oh, yeah. Robert Blake would kill you for that. I was just going to say that, I guess the thing with Peter Falk is it didn't seem like he was slumming as opposed to a lot of these other people who were.
Mm-hmm.
And that, of course, leads us to Alec Guinness.
Well, before we get to that, there were some exceptions. I mean, Elsa Lanchester, best known as the Bride of Frankenstein, probably didn't have that many other options at that point in her career.
True.
Same thing with Maggie Smith, who was kind of on her way up.
Yeah.
But that's two out of how many?
But poor, you know, David Niven and Alec Guinness Peter Sellers.
Mm-hmm.
No.
Speaking of which, another bit of trivia.
What?
While working on this film, Alec Guinness received the script for Star Wars. Read it, and he read between scenes in his dressing room.
Well, what I thought was funny... was that Neil Simon knew how bad this movie was and told Alec Guinness if there was anything he didn't like, he'd rewrite for him. But Alec Guinness
said,
no, he loved it.
No,
it's all great.
Mm-hmm.
I think he was just that grateful to be working.
Yeah.
Sad.
Or he was just being polite.
that could be it either. Also,
I think, well, perhaps.
Peter Sellers also played a joke on both of them, actually more on Neil Simon, and called up Neil Simon in the middle of the night, impersonating Alec Guinness.
Yes, asking for all sorts of rewrites.
In the middle of the night.
And apparently neither of them were too happy about the joke.
Right.
But I have a theory about Guinness and his reluctance to ask for rewrites. Now, you know, we know he got the Star Wars script while working on it.
Right.
Maybe he knew this was going to be, you know, a joke, and then the next thing he did was going to be huge. Maybe he saw the potential in New Hope and said, okay, I don't need to worry about this. The next project is going to make my career.
Well, the thing is, nobody saw the potential in New Hope.
Maybe he did.
You know, most people thought that was going to be a one and done.
Yeah, yeah.
It was going to be one episode that we would do here, you know. Well, remember that crazy
it definitely
movie
would have
combined,
been on our list if it was just one, yeah.
That combined fantasy and sci-fi wasn't that cheesy. No one thought that was going to be.
Yeah, the legend, the monster that it became, yeah.
Right, right. Except for maybe Mr. Lucas.
Yeah, yeah.
But they went along with it.
Mm-hmm.
And, so yeah, Alec Guinness, I don't think he was thinking his meal ticket was stamped, so to speak.
Perhaps.
At that point.
And I gotta say, he also provided one of the highlights of the movie. I mean, he was brilliant throughout, it's Alec Guinness. But when he plays a woman briefly at the end, when they think, you know, he's the daughter.
Yeah.
That was hilarious. Just to see Alec Guinness do that.
He also provided a lot of the groaners, like some of the worst jokes in this, really.
Well, yeah, yeah.
Like his name being Benson
Mum.
Yeah.
See, this is a bit of a twist on the usual, because I'm usually the one complaining about the cheap jokes, and you're the one who's into them.
Well,
I just kind of went with it and enjoyed them.
There's cheap jokes, and then... Wow. You expect more from Neil Simon, I think. That's the point.
Perhaps, yeah, yeah.
You know, this is the dude that wrote The Odd Couple.
True.
And you would think, putting him together with this cast, he would have gold here. I mean, talking Peter Sellers. Peter Sellers with two more Pink Panthers left in him.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you're expecting a lot more out of him.
But he did have, I think, he had a point to make with this one, I think. Because that last speech of Capote's,
yeah,
that brought it all back for me. About how, you know, you don't introduce a character at the, you know, in the last chapter who is the murderer. And all these things that mystery writers do that really piss the audience off.
Yeah, and maybe they were more guilty of it back then. Because, I mean, the mysteries I see now, I mean...
Well, that was particularly an issue for me. I don't know if you watch Castle. The first season, I was batting like 900. I always had... Who knew who it was, like, halfway through the episode. Second season, they changed it all, and they started doing that. They started, you know, making it so you couldn't figure it out, and it always pissed me off. And I hate when mysteries do that. I want to be able to... Even if I don't figure it out, I want to have had all of the pieces there.
Hmm.
So I could have. So I really loved that speech.
Well, I guess I was still lost after all of the theories and the, no, it was you. And
Well, that was classic mystery, though.
Yeah, to do it like
that was
time.
Practically straight out of Agatha Christie.
True. But they usually, I guess the goof is that they wind up doing it six times, and you're just kind of
well,
like,
that's
okay,
the joke.
Already. Yeah.
No. I referenced Rocky Horror last week. There was another bit in this that reminded me of Rocky.
And I could see that. This did remind me a lot of Rocky.
Well, particularly, I think it's when you first see Twain, and he's in a wheelchair. And the wheelchair, when he leaves his exit, it's...
And you want to throw the toilet paper up and yell,
it's,
great Scott!
You know, the chair goes in reverse, like at 20 miles an hour, out of the door.
Mm-hmm.
And it was like Dr. Scott's entrance in reverse.
It was. That scene was very Rocky. The
and Rocky was out.
All the disco lights.
And Rocky came out a year before this.
Was it only, I thought it was 74.
I checked, it was 75. Rocky came out a year before this. So they may have been referencing Rocky.
I think so. And this director, I mean, I had to look up about him. It seems like his main deal was directing Neil Simon works.
Mm-hmm.
And apparently a lot of TV work, too, but mostly Neil Simon work.
Makes sense. A lot of Simon's work did translate to television.
And he really just didn't seem to know what he was doing through the movie. It kind of really, it really showed in this, I thought. There were just, you were just, it was kind of an amateurish shot, really.
But I think that's its appeal to me. It knew it was bad. It didn't take itself seriously.
True. They did know this was bad. It kind of, to me, that ending really felt like Neil Simon just kind of gave up, you know? It really, I don't think I've ever seen a movie where you're just, wow, he just stopped. He just, that was it.
You mean the final reveal at the end? The very end?
I would say the whole whodunit thing at the end where they're the multiple reveals and everything.
I liked that.
It just seemed like he stopped.
I think I think the issue here, you expected a lot out of Neil Simon. I've never been a huge Neil Simon fan. So I kind of applied our usual rule. You know, they had fun, so I had fun. Because the cast was just really just having fun with this script. They knew it wasn't a masterpiece. They just enjoyed it.
I mean, I don't know. It didn't seem like Eileen Brennan was having fun.
It never seems like she's having fun.
Everything that, including the famous, I have to go to the can, you know, I don't want to miss nothing, you know, everything looked like she was in pain.
But isn't that then just about every character she's ever played, or ever did play? I'm not sure if she's still with us.
And I'm not sure why, though. I mean, does that make sense? Yes, she's still with us. So
okay.
Up.
But that's every character she's ever played looks like she's in pain. That's her shtick. I mean, she was kind of phoning it in. If I had to accuse somebody of that, she was definitely phoning it in.
The Nancy Walker, I mean.
Mm-hmm. Oh, interesting bit of trivia about her. This was her last movie. And
yeah.
It was ironic that she didn't say a single word in it.
Yeah, you could almost see the paycheck in her back pocket,
yeah.
Too.
That's true. You could definitely, yeah, she was there for the money. Clearly. And she said, basically, it's a gig where, you know, I don't have to learn any lines. I'm sold. I'm in.
I'm surprised that this is her last movie. I mean, she did those Bounty commercials. After this.
And I think, Rhoda might have been after this.
What was her after this?
Rhoda.
Oh, and we're around the same time, maybe.
Possibly.
Yeah.
So it wasn't that she was, you know, near death. It was just that she stopped doing movies, I guess. I guess TV was a better, and the commercials were a steady paycheck, perhaps.
Yeah.
Whereas movies weren't. You know, I think that's probably what it was.
But yeah, she was so obviously phoning it in because, well, she didn't have any lines.
Mm-hmm.
She really just sat there.
And I gotta say, I really did enjoy the couple of scenes between her and Guinness.
You did?
It was cheap slapstick, but I liked it.
I don't know, I was cringing through that. I don't know, it was just so, so far-fetched that it was just, I don't know, you need to have some sort of shred of this might actually happen in one way or another in order to lead to humor?
I don't know. It was kind of absurdist in that way.
Yeah. Neil Simon doesn't do absurdist very well, does he? Maybe that's the problem.
At least we're back to our usual, you know, you hate a movie, I try to defend it.
Yeah, that was the only thing I got out of this was, wow, good thing that whole 4-episode, 5 brain streak has now come to an end for me. Because that was just a little weird, I thought.
Mm-hmm. Just a little bit of interesting potential casting. Orson Welles was originally considered for the role of Inspector Wang, but was unable to accept because he was appearing in a play in Italy.
I don't understand how that would have worked.
I think that would have been brilliant. I mean, no other respect to Peter Sellers, he nailed it, but Welles in that part would have been screamingly funny.
If Peter Sellers was not in this movie, I don't know. This could be rivaling Battlefield Earth if Peter Sellers wasn't in this movie. I mean, he really was the glue. I mean, he clearly didn't phone it in, but he still just had so little to work with.
Well, I mean, like Charlie Chan, the character was a walking stereotype.
I think Orson Welles would have been much better as Lionel Twain.
Oh, yeah.
Than
he would have been perfect for the part.
Even better than Capote.
Yeah, I mean, you know, Capote certainly was no actor.
Right.
But I think he did give it something interesting.
Well, that's true, too. He had the novelty of being Truman Capote.
And just being that personality.
Right.
So I think if Wells, I mean, Wells would have acted much better, of course, but I think that wouldn't have been as much fun.
Well, he would have had the whole evil, you know, genius thing down, and I think he would have, you probably would have been better off having the better actor in there to do it.
They actually did consider replacing Capote with a real actor,
right.
But they never got around to it.
Yeah. Because they were phoning it in. They clearly said, who cares? I'm Neil Simon, and I've got Peter Sellers and all these other people. It'll sell on its own. Another person I felt bad for in this, but this must have been very early in his career, of course, James Cromwell.
I thought he did a great job. I mean, yes, it was very early, but I think he did what he could with the part, although I didn't recognize him for a while.
Really?
He was one of those, I just kind of sat there, like, why does he look familiar? I know this guy from somewhere. I forget who it was last week I had that reaction to in Psycho.
Bookman.
Bookman.
Probably.
It was the same kind of thing, where I just kind of knew him from somewhere. I couldn't quite place him, and then I noticed the name in the credits.
Yeah, it's really only a couple years into his acting career.
Mm-hmm.
You know, just did some TV work before this. And, yeah, that's pretty much it. And, so it's his first big movie, which is cool.
Oh, yeah.
They kind of had a sequel in spirit.
Years
later.
Did that get made? Okay, I wasn't clear about that.
It wasn't, you know, necessarily, you know, a sequel to this, but they had pretty much the same cast, and only minus Peter Sellers, I think, so it really isn't worth watching.
I may have to check it out. So, I'm done with my notes. You got anything else?
Nothing.
So we're on to sequels and remakes?
How much was there to research this?
So, obviously, a sequel has been done, and any further sequels kind of beside the point.
Yeah, the sequel was called The Cheap Detective, so it wasn't a plot sequel. It was more of a send-off of... It was Simon sending up the Humphrey Bogart movies.
Okay, gotcha.
So, of course, you've got... you got Peter Falk in there again playing some other, you know, Humphrey Bogart detective. And fortunately, Al Guinness goes on to have a career.
But I think a remake could be interesting. Now follow me. Not the same characters.
Mm-hmm.
Except maybe Twain. Keep Twain. Because Twain wasn't a reference to anybody in particular.
Right.
But get the TV detectives PIs from the 80s, 70s and 80s. Get Beretta, Columbo, Magnum PI, Matlock, Murder, She Wrote, whatever Agatha Christie's, or Angela Lansbury's characters.
Isn't this The Expendables?
Kind of.
Okay,
but and you play
checking.
And you play on the tropes of the 70s and 80s.
Hmm.
Of course, you know, put Cromwell in as Matlock. Maggie Smith in his, Murder, She Wrote. Can't remember the character's name. And, of course, as we mentioned, as you spoiled earlier, Philip Seymour Hoffman in the Capote role.
So should I enter a spoiler alert when I said, where I said that back then?
No.
Okay.
It wasn't really a spoiler. You were just spoiling, you were just kind of giving away something I had for sequels and remakes, and no big deal. but I think that would be great, you know, just completely play on the 80s.
And of course, you have Ewan McGregor as Benson Mum.
Yes, good call. I was actually going to put Anthony Daniels in that role, but I completely forgot about Ewan McGregor. Yes.
Young Benson Mum. That has to be one of the worst gags.
That
Let's
was...
go dig up Neil Simon right now for that one.
Really? Wow. So I guess we're on to brains?
Yeah, I think so. I don't think there's much more you can really do with the remake of this.
No, no.
Yeah.
So what are you giving it?
I'm giving it 2. It had, I'd say you have to make it through that first half hour of some pretty bad gags. And I think why I'm hard on this, I think there are movies that have, in this style, that have been done so much better.
It is kind of a Mel Brooks thing, and obviously the Mel Brooks stuff is better.
Well, you're right. You look at what Mel Brooks did before this.
Mm-hmm.
You look at, you know, the Airplane movies that came after this.
I don't know if it's... I can't say Airplane was necessarily... Well, the first one, okay. The second one, no, no.
The second one had William Shatner in it.
The second one was craptacular.
Sonny Bono, I'll take the bomb on the left, please.
Yeah, no.
You know, I mean...
The first Airplane, I'll give you. The entire Mel Brooks canon up through Men in Tights, I'll give you. Not Airplane 2.
Better than this, though.
I don't know about that.
Dare say. I mean, this was pretty low on the totem pole. I'm not saying Airplane 2 is a classic, but maybe if you put it up to this, it does. Register that. And another movie that did this genre way better, Clue.
See, there was some debate about that on the IMDb forums. A lot of people were saying this was better than Clue.
No way. No way, no how. The running gags were just... They worked so much better in Clue. Imagine if Clue had Peter Sellers in it.
Mm. Well, it had Tim Curry, so...
Well, Tim Curry, you know, is a good replacement for Alec Guinness, if you think about it.
Right. He was the butler, I forgot.
Right.
I haven't seen Clue in a while.
But, I mean, you know, Martin Mull, Christopher Lloyd,
mm-hmm.
Was it Michael Keenan, I believe, is yeah. Mr. Green, Madeline Kahn. I mean, true, they, Peter Sellers is a one-of-a-kind actor.
Mm-hmm.
But I think as a movie, Clue works so much better than this.
Mm-hmm.
So if you want to see a mystery spoof, I'd go with that one over this.
See, I, like I said, for the first 3 quarters, I wasn't quite as low as you, but I was hovering around a 3.5.
Yeah.
But there was something, and I'm not sure when it was, maybe it was that last speech of Capote's that I absolutely adored, but there was a moment when I just got everything and loved it. And I'm going to have to give it a 5.
A 5?
Yeah, I'm going 5 on this one.
Wow. Better than Psycho.
For what it was, because, I mean, Psycho would have been beyond a 5 if it wasn't for that last scene, as I made clear. But, I don't know what it was. Maybe if I watch it again, I'll change my mind, but I just, by the end, I loved this movie.
See, the first half hour or so, the first act, if you will, is, and usually a first act is your strongest material, I'm not sure.
It was kind of weak. It started weak, I'll give you that.
Very weak.
Yeah.
It was quite painful to watch the first act, and I think I like this a lot better when I usually missed and tuned into this movie
uh-huh.
late on TV or whatever.
Right, right.
Enjoying the rest of it a lot more. But after sitting through the first act, oof.
I think that may have tainted your opinion. I think you're kind of just rating the first act, perhaps.
Well, I enjoyed.
And you just kind of gave up on the rest of it.
I enjoyed the second act, and then the third act was kind of like, wow, they. Really just felt like they gave up. I mean, he had a point with his rant about the about mystery writers,
yeah.
But did it really make a full movie?
No. Yeah, maybe.
No.
I don't know. I loved it.
So I'm giving it 2 to just to see Alec Guinness and, of course, and Peter Sellers, and some jokes
mm-hmm.
did hit their mark.
The waitress joke I love, too.
Yeah.
Squeeze that one in. So, what have we learned?
That there was just one problem with this movie.
Neil Simon?
It's stupid. That's my favorite joke of the movie.
And I learned that it's probably a good thing that Capote didn't do much more acting.
Yeah.
So, until next week when we will be watching Jesus Christ Vampire Hunter. You've been looking forward to that one.
Oh, when we bring in the pain, we bring in the pain.
I don't know. This one might not be painful. I don't. I got hope.
I don't know. Yeah, I wasn't sure if this was going to be painful either, but it was.
Until then, always remember, never forget, wherever you go in life, there you are.
Conversation like a television set on honeymoon. Unnecessary.
There are jokes in there, if you look really hard enough. And some of them are funny. Say, I buried Paul.
Turn me on number 9. Turn me on number 9.
Yeah, there. Congratulations. You found the secret message.
Wow, this part might actually end up at the end of the episode.
I think so.